Brian Bonilla. We're back. Episode number 4. How the heck are you doing today, sir?
Well, one, I can't believe it's been just a week since our last conversation, right?
Mm-hmm. Did the A-list breakdown.
Yeah, if you missed that, that's, you know, a timeless episode. So check that out if you missed it. But yeah, I'm good, man. How you doing?
Doing well. That Wayfair stuff that we talked about launched and got some coverage. So I'm happy. And the stuff looks great. Seeing the ad, like live, the campaign going, all the hard work, like happy for everybody that worked on that.
No, that's great, man. And like, how does that, is that like, take me behind the scenes a little bit. Like, what's the moment like when you get the coverage you want, you know?
Well, you have to remember that these creatives have been working on this campaign for just around 12 months. Like, we got Wayfair and they started working on this right away. They loved the idea. So these creatives have been, you know, traveling, going on set, you know, working on this new world that they created, the Wayberhood. So it's a lot of pressure on me. And, you know, I want to make sure that their hard work gets celebrated and noticed. And people can be like, hey, I know that Havas Chicago made this. So it's really fulfilling when you can celebrate other people. That's my favorite part of the job, getting people celebrated, their hard work recognized. So that's always like the main goal.
For sure. Yeah, man. I mean, it's good work.
Thank you.
Yeah.
So we are talking today. We have our usual structure, a little bit different too. So we have the headline of the week. We're going to do something called a shot clock in honor of March Madness. Yeah. Who are you having at all, Brian?
Look, I'm, you know, first of all, I saw that big upset at, you know, Kentucky. Did you see that?
Yep.
I think that ruined a lot of brackets.
So I did not
make a bracket this year for that exact reason. I don't need the stress. You know, I just don't need it. But
I mean, there's like the way to auto-generate it. And like, that's what I did. I auto-generated it from like a sportscaster. And then I just like tweaked it. I didn't go through every one.
Yeah.
But this looks pretty good. I'm going to have Illinois win and call it a day.
Yeah. Is that your favorite? Is that your team?
That's where I went. So okay. They look pretty good. So I have them winning one bracket and then UNC, because I visited UNC, University of North Carolina, and spoke to those students. So I got to give them some love too.
I'm sure they're watching. They're like, Gino picked us. Therefore we gotta go all the way.
Yeah, man. And then I went to a game there. It's like with Michael Jordan being like an alum there, it's like a great atmosphere there. So I'm a little biased.
That's amazing, man. That's amazing.
We got the shot clock, 2-minute timer, right? On a couple different headlines. We only get 2 minutes.
Yeah.
And then we're going to talk about something that, in theory, the article that you published should be live today when people are listening to this. Actually, we won't post this until that article is live. So it is live officially.
It is live. Check it out. And it's a very interesting article. We'll talk about it at the end of the episode.
Boom. Anything else you want to add into this overview, Brian? This is your show.
Yeah. I mean, look, I think we're not going to talk about all these things, but there were a lot of big executive moves, these past couple of weeks. Droga5 hiring a worldwide chief creative officer who's coming from, you know, Activision Blizzard, Pele.
Activision, you said?
Yeah. Pele Chanel and, you know, McKinney. Durham, you know, a lot of people think of them as like a North Carolina, Durham agency. They have offices, you know, New York and others. And their CEO became the CEO of Barbarian and president of Tail North America, which is a holding company, which was founded by Samsung, which is...
What was the name of the holding company?
It's called Chail.
Chail.
Chail Worldwide.
How do you spell that?
Chail.
Yeah. The holding company?
Yeah, they're, you know, they're like, it's interesting. They were founded by Samsung in the 1970s to like be the holding, like the most of the marketing for Samsung.
Right? Really?
And, you know, I think a lot of people think of them as that still, but they actually have agencies, you know, in the US and things like that. I think they're at like a 10, you know, I'm trying to remember the numbers, but they're like in that mid-size range where Stagwell is. Mm-hmm. You know, kind of that like middle They're the 10th largest holding company. So,
oh, dang.
You know, they have Barbarian, they have McKinney in the US, and Barbarian in like 2013 came on the scene when like digital and social was like really big. And I think they're looking for the next, you know, version of that agency under, you know, Joe Maglio, who's the CEO of McKinney, who really has blown up McKinney as the agency. He's really grown that agency. Wow. They're the lead creative for Popeyes and Little Caesars.
Yep.
So, you know, they've, you know, I think they're putting all their bets on Joe right now.
Good to know. So some agency moves, some leadership moves, those are always important because that will change the structure in theory. I think students need to see where the tides are turning. So it's always good to kind of keep up to date on those leadership changes. It might seem far away from you, right? Everybody listening, like, why do I need to know about CMO changes of agencies or who's winning and stuff like that? But that can trickle down to where you want to work.
Right, exactly. Yeah, if you look at who's like Pele, like if you like his style of marketing, if you like his background that he was in gaming, you know, if you read the article, David Droga is talking about, you know, he wants the next version of Droga 5. Does that interest you as someone who like, maybe you don't want the old version of a certain agency, maybe you want to be part of like, you know, a new revolution, right, or something. So like, think about that.
And then if there's a podcast or an article written by Ad Age or Breaking and Entering interviews the new agency leader, you listen to that, you read that article 20 times, and then if you get an interview, you know what to say. That's what I did with Richard Edelman back in the day when I first broke in. I just listened to the same episode, read the same articles about him, and then talked about it in my recruiter interview. And the recruiter's like, how do you know our game plan? And that kind of like elevated me. So you do your research too, and you get the job.
That's funny.
Oh man, that was a weird time, 2020. Like just the craziest time.
Full like some logo.
Yeah. All right, Ryan. What's the agency headline of the week?
This was an interesting one. And, you know, we kind of touched on how important creators are in our last episode. So this one, this headline from Jillian, shout out Jillian, our, you know, one of our newer reporters, but killing it. And she focused on influencer work.
How do you pronounce your last name?
That's a good question.
Follett?
I don't know about
Jillian. If you hear this,
Follett,
call us up. We'll have you call in and we can
come on the episode and let us know.
That's the call to action, Jillian. And she's great too. She did a great job with the Gen Z Summit.
So this headline is how creators are getting agency jobs and why agencies need them.
Creators getting agency jobs.
You know, I think I've been like beating this drum for the past year now, but like, you know, we're just seeing more agencies invest in creators. And these don't have to be like, you don't have to have a million followers on Instagram or TikTok. You can be a creator at home with just a few interesting posts. Agencies just want to see your creativity through social media, which is one of the fastest growing mediums in advertising. I think in the past, social media was seen as like just like a low budget thing that if you go viral, you go viral. But now, you know, this is where a lot of people are consuming the news and their own content, you know, in a world where like, you know, I don't watch as much TV as I used to. Like I'm on YouTube and I'm on, you know, LinkedIn and X and Instagram, probably more than I'm on, you know, traditional television. So the story goes on to focus on like certain agencies like Dentsu and Vayner and Edelman who have carved out specific, you know, teams for creators. And these are like, some of these agencies have 15 full-time creators on staff. Some, I think Edelman has like 50 to 70 creators on staff full-time, you know, and they're working with clients like TJ Maxx and big clients, you know?
Yeah. I could see how an in-house agency on the marketing side, like in a suite of brands, let's say at, like I'm in Chicago, so like Kraft Heinz, I think The Kitchen has a lot of creators because they execute the strategies that they already have potentially and they know the brand super well. So I can see that in an in-house setting. So this is surprising to me that agencies are saying we need to adopt more of this and we need to start getting these people on the roster.
And some of it is like, you know, in Edelman's case, they have a, you know, they have their own Gen Z, you know, team creator lab where it's not just you have these creators, you might be able to consult for brands like are curious about how to do this properly on social media, you know, and you have your own creative lab. And the you know, big part of this story actually is about, you know, the fact that yes, creators are hot now, but do they understand how to like read a client brief properly?
Right.
They know how to, you know, edit, you know, for an ad versus, you know, just something you're doing for fun or collaborate, right? Because a lot of times
they're solo, their own craft.
Yeah. Right. So like, that's what the story goes deeper into. And interestingly enough, you know, the One Club launched their own program. It's tuition free and it focuses on recruiting people who want to be creators in the ad industry. They got 800 applicants.
Damn.
And they only launched it last fall and they got, I think, 23 graduates. So, you know, that is becoming like a new avenue into the industry, you know, which I think is really exciting.
Yeah. I want to check that out too.
Yeah.
And maybe they're hiring them. Maybe they don't want some of these agencies do not want the traditional advertising brief structure, art director, copywriter. That could be something that they're strategically putting in place too.
Right. Yeah. I think, you know, I think the sweet spot is probably like a creator who like maybe knows, you know, what client briefs are, but maybe doesn't always have to follow them. Or like doesn't always have to, has their own maybe style, but maybe, yeah, but is aware of like the advertising space. You know what I mean?
Yeah. So if you're a student or aspiring advertiser, you're looking to break into this field, you should definitely check out that article and see, do you have some of those skills as a creator? Do you have your own account? Are you an influencer? Is this, maybe you go all in, you know, maybe traditional advice and thinking has told you to stray away from that. Go to a traditional portfolio school, go to like figure out how to do spec work traditionally. Maybe you should stray away from that traditional way of thinking and go all in on your strengths.
And you know, one, I want to shout out agencies that helped launch the program in partnership. So Dentsu, Ogilvy, Day One, VML, Deutsche Lake, Attention, and Whaler. Razorfish, another agency that has their own creator lab that they just kind of started. And, you know, I'll end it with this. We interviewed one of the graduates of the program and he was talking about, he was like a creator / musician. He didn't know how to monetize like his passion for creating stuff on social media. He didn't know that there was a viable option in advertising. And I think, you know, a lot of times students probably still think traditionally like about a copywriter and an art director and things like that. And I think this is just like a new way of getting into the space. It doesn't mean that you will stay as a creator.
Right.
Do, but
get you in. Yeah. It'll get you in and you can explore from there.
Yeah.
I love it. Unlock the new break-in strategy. That's big. That's right on brand with the podcast. So nice work, Brian.
Yeah.
Amazing. Let's get into the shot clock, shall we?
Wait.
I am going to put a 2-minute timer. That's all you get, Brian. In honor of March Madness and University of Illinois, we're going to win it all. There's the jinx. Only 2 minutes. So I'm going to hold you to it and I will beep you. What is the first one? I'll let you say the title and then I'll start the timer after the title is set. How's that sound, Brian?
Let's do it.
All right. Title first, and then the clock starts.
Cool. Why agencies are using AI interns to humanize generative technology.
Using AI interns.
AI interns. I know that sounds scary.
And the clock starts now.
Yeah. So this one, this article by Asa Hicken. I've never said his last name. Anyway, this focuses on AI interns. There's a couple agencies that have launched AI interns internally. The most recent one being Jack Morton, the experiential agency. I know this sounds like they're replacing interns and taking jobs. That's not really the case. Jack Morton has launched their own AI tool where it acts as like just a more human face. It's like a virtual assistant that people can use to learn about the different AI tools that Jack Morton may have access to. But it is being used in client meetings and pitches just to like kind of introduce people in a more friendly way of the possibilities of technology. You know, this was another agency, Coldword, had also had their own AI interns, I think, a couple of years ago. And that was more stunty, but I think the same idea applies. I think it's just a way to help your own employees think of AI differently or have more to it.
So do they create it themselves? Like, is it their own software?
Yeah, they have their own, like, if you look at it, it's like, it's called Zara, the person or the thing. And it looks like a Wall-E character. And they you know, they created like an actual person who's like going to post on social media and like things like that. And it looks like a cartoon, you know.
And it's not going to actually replace real interns. There's not a real threat, hopefully, right, to real interns?
I don't think so, based on what the need is, because I think the idea is just to create a virtual assistant.
Mm-hmm.
Helps you out, you know.
It is interesting when they frame it as an intern.
Look, yeah. I think they also want, you know, and there was a quote in there about it is a way of like having an assistant who doesn't, you don't have to train them.
Yep.
Like that. And in that way, it could be replacing interns, but
time is up.
All right.
Nice. We got some good stuff in the 2 minutes there. Turn. All right. So people can check that out as well.
Check it out.
Next article.
All right. So this one, you know, speaking of executive moves, I wanted to spend some time talking about this one. So Chris Cavallo, who people, you know is the CEO of MullenLowe.
Timer starting now.
Global CEO of MullenLowe retired from advertising to pursue political activism. And I spent about an hour with Kristen on the phone talking about this decision. She was the CEO of Martin until recently, where she gave away the title to Danny Robinson, the chief creative officer before that. And, you know, there's a lot of reasons for this. First of all, you should know Kristen. If you don't know Kristen, she's been a very vocal leader, spoke out, you know, against or towards Coinbase when they, you know, took credit for some work that Accenture Song did, the big Super Bowl ad. You know, she's been a very vocal leader on female women's rights in advertising. And, you know,
just a legend overall.
And so now she's just pursuing politics. She doesn't know exactly if she'll ever run for office, although she did allude to wanting to be governor in 2022.
In Virginia,
that's where she lives. And, you know, this is just a big move and just like a big person in the industry that people should be aware of, you know?
Yeah. I think definitely an icon, will go down in history as one of the greats. So sad to see her leaving advertising. But, you know, I imagine she'll take some time off. Mm-hmm. Who knows what she'll do next? I think she alluded to politics, right? But
yeah.
Would you be surprised if she got another agency job in the future?
Look, I asked her about it. It's, you know, there's obviously non-competes and things like that. But yep. I think, you know, I would never say never, but
right.
Pretty determined on this, and she has strong political leanings on the Democratic side. That's her thing, and she's really focused on like female and rights and things like that.
Advertising can take you and create some interesting places, right? Even politics after it's all said and done. And that brings us to 3 seconds left. Nice work there.
All right.
Timer is up.
Getting a little better on this.
Yeah, you crushed that one. Right on the dot. All right. Third shot clock and on our March Madness 2 minute timer. What's the title? And I'll start the timer right after you say the title.
Sure. Former Wieden Kennedy execs on Nike launch an agency.
Oh, yes.
Yes.
I got this one sent to me from friends. Gino, you got to check this out. So the timer will start now.
So Alberto Ponte, Dan Shaniak, and Ryan O'Rourke have been working on the Nike account of Wieden for a long time. You know, and been responsible for probably some of your favorite
ads of all time.
You know, and so, you know, I don't really want to list all of the things. Just check it out. But, you know, find your greatness, which I think is one of the more known ads in Nike, you know, more recently, or like the one with the Serena and Williams and Venus Williams, like, you know,
Colin Kaepernick ad, I believe.
And yeah, so check out their work. It speaks for itself. But interestingly, they launched their own agency called Someplace. And, you know, I think it's just another example of, you know, a small agency being founded by really highly respected executives in the industry. We're seeing a lot of it. You know, Bandits and Friends was one recently from former Goodby executives. You know, Quality Meats has been catching fire, and they're all just a 10-person shop. So definitely check that agency out, you know, if you're interested in working.
Yeah. I mean, you know, I think, and from my perspective, working in the agency industry right now, everybody kind of dreams about going to Wyden, Portland to check out the Nike account. Like, that's the one account. I mean, Apple, TBWA, Media Arts Lab, you know, Levi's account. Are they even still with PBH? Just historically speaking, these are like the big brands people want to work on someday.
Right,
so
right.
To hear that they are leaving after, I think, 20 years to start their own shop kind of ladders into the larger article that we're going to get into next. Is that accurate?
I think you hit it on the spot. But yeah, do you want to get further into that?
Yeah, and that brings us to the end of our 2-minute segment there. And the shot clock segment is over.
Let's do it.
Great. Great work. So, Kristen, agency AI interns, don't worry. They're not going to take your internship. Wyden employees open up. Ex-Wyden employees open up a new shop. Those are the three on the shot clock. Nice job, Brian. There's so much more news out there. You know where to find these headlines. So, Brian, your article just went live today, this morning.
Yeah.
We're recording this right now. It's not out yet. So I don't know what the headline is. So give me the rundown. What are you going to be publishing? What's published right now?
Yeah. And so I worked on this with Lindsay Randhouse. We had on our podcast a couple of weeks ago. So this headline is Inside Mid-Sized Agencies and How They're Reinventing Themselves.
Mid-Sized Agencies, How They're Reinventing Themselves. Could this change? You know, we're just going to... Is that headline locked in?
I think it's locked in.
Okay, that's all right. But it's going to be about mid-sized agencies. So tell me about that. What do we need to know?
Yeah, I think, you know, this idea started with, like, this premise that I had talking to Matter about, like, the messy middle within the industry right now. And then... that's kind of how I was talking about it internally. But, you know, we're seeing more mergers within the middle of the industry. So you have the Nike guys that we just talked about, right? You have those 3-person, the 10 people shops.
These independent shops of incredible leaders are opening up day by day. It's like new shop. Yeah. We just saw it with Quality Meats. We saw it with Quality
Experience.
Quality Experience. Thank you very much.
Yeah.
It's like we got these small titans just opening up these shops. Mischief, like, you know, High Dive once was one of these, right?
Right. So you're seeing these teams, and, like, you know, from executives that I've spoken to, you know, these are the ones we know about. They're teams.
They're flooding right now.
There are teams out there that are pitching with no agency name, no office. They're just like 2 people. But they're winning big accounts. You know, I had an executive last week. I went to lunch with them, and they told me that, you know, they lost an account, a pretty sizable account, you know, for one of the major, like, networks, television networks. And it went to, like, these 2 people who don't have an agency, but knew the CMO at the company.
Oh, so there's stuff being formed right now. I'm telling you, every agency leader or, like, high up is thinking, like, ooh, should I do that? Why are you doing that?
Right. And so you're seeing on one spectrum, that's happening. On the other spectrum, you're seeing the giant mergers. VML is kind of the poster, you know, for gigantic agencies right now.
Yeah, an Accenture song, like, you know, these, like, unification, these mergers. I don't know what the correct terminology is. They're, like, they're combining in.
Well, yeah, a song is like acquiring, you know, they acquired Working Co, got getting acquired, you know, and then on that layer too, there's independent networks like acquiring, like, LNC, which was a small shop, you know, acquiring a minority.
LNC got acquired.
This was like last year.
Yeah,
was,
we had one of the founders on the show a while back when they were first getting their run started.
Right, and they had a minority stake, so they're still majority owners. But like, you know, that's another that service plan that acquired a piece of them. So you're seeing all these things happen, and what I thought was interesting was the Barclay OKRP merger. On the heels of that merger, you saw Carmichael Lynch, IPG agency, merged with a Philadelphia mostly based agency called Tierney Communications.
Turner? How do you spell that?
T-I-E-R-N-E-Y. If I misspelled that, apologies. But
yeah, I-N-E always messes me up. Which one goes first? So that happened right after the Barclay OKRP?
Yeah, just a week or two after. And that's another 400 person shop. McKinney, who I just mentioned, that's not a merger, but that's one leader leading around 400 or above 400 people, you know.
What do you define as mid-size? Let's get that very clear. So small, what's the new small? What's the new mid? What's the new large?
Well, for now, I think, you know, especially with our small agency conference, we consider small to be 1 to 150. That's where we've considered small for a while now. And I think for years it has been, midsize has been considered 100 to 200 in that range. But I think, you know, I think 400, 300 to 400 might become
right
midsize.
And right. 300 to 400 might be midsize because we're seeing these large agencies get swallowed up into these big, like, monsters of thousands.
Yeah. I mean, and look, it makes sense, right? Wyden is 500. Tombras is around 500, you know, so they've been around. Barclay was pretty big for its own size. And so it's a few reasons why we're seeing this happen, right? One, we're seeing larger agencies compete for smaller budgets. So you're seeing agencies, you know, like the Drogas, like the Wydens, like, you know, these agencies compete against small agencies for, let's say, like a $3 to $5 million account, which I think historically in the past, you wouldn't have seen that, right?
Yeah. So the playing field is leveled due to the lower budgets on the marketing side from these companies.
Yeah. And then you're also seeing clients, you know, maybe not hiring these big creative shops. They're hiring a small creative shop for like large campaigns. And then they're hiring, you know, another agency that could do the rest of it. So like,
right,
CRM, media, you know, performance and production and whatever, right? So why do you need to hire? And this is speaking from a consultant who told me, why do I need to hire an agency that has 100 people on the creative team when I can just hire a 50-person agency who can be just as creative and then hire a performance agency or something?
Right. And because the funnel on the marketing side, I actually talked to a CEO and record an episode for our brand side. And they're a startup right now. It's a new dating app. So that will be released soon. It's really interesting. She was saying, we don't need a one shop right now for the whole thing. We just need to target specific parts of the marketing funnel, whether it's awareness down to like buy, whatever that is. So they get niche agencies that are cheaper, that are specialized for each part of the funnel. At this point, as a startup with, you know, funding, that's her strategy. That's what she was telling me.
Right.
So why wouldn't you want like a niche little shop that can just crush that specific part of the funnel?
Right. Yeah. And on the other end, it does not have to be a merger, right? So what I've spoken to with certain consultants is they're predicting there's going to be more partnerships out there. And one partnership that happened, I believe it was last year as well, was Joan partnering with Cross Media. Joan, a small agency.
I remember that, yeah.
You know, Cross Media, pretty big media agency. So the idea is they can help each other on areas they don't have.
Right? Different P&Ls, right? They're not like,
right,
profit and loss statements is like a big thing. So they're not like legally combined, but they kind of had that soft agreement like, hey, we're going to tag team these pitches together. So we know each other really well, and that makes it more appealing to the marketers on the brand side and be like, okay, this is a good package duo. They know each other pretty well. I can see you going with them. And I like their niche approaches too.
Yeah. And they already,
that's interesting.
We interviewed them for this piece and they already won a piece of business with their partnership. And another consultant told me like he's running a few like influencer pitches, which are big right now. And these, you know, these influencers, almost all of them have an agency as their client. So like a creative agency as a client are hiring influencer agencies just for influencer work, you know? So like on the opposite spectrum, you're seeing creators, right, get hired into these agencies. On the other end, you're seeing agencies hire influencer agencies just for that capability. So, you know, it's getting messy out here.
It's getting stretched, right? Like the gap is growing, I feel like, to me. And I was talking with a friend, like, what's in-house looking like? Like, is that the way to go? Those in-house agencies within specific brands, like, do you know where they stand in all this, Brian?
I think, you know, like you said earlier, a lot of them do hire for social media and creator. I don't think a lot of in-house agencies are doing big brand work. Some are.
Yeah. Yeah, and they'll still open. I've had a couple conversations, not a lot, but like these in-house agencies at like a insert big brand here, they'll do like a lot of their social work. But then if there is a big brand campaign, like they'll have them pitch against other agencies internally.
Right, right. So, you know, I think they are different. They're not being as affected in terms of like what's happening here, but, you know, it's not the same type of work a lot of times. And I think people just need to know if you're going to go the in-house route, try to understand what the type of work you're going to be doing is.
Yeah.
I have spoken to some people who like get bored of the work after a few years. Some people love it though, you know? Right.
If you were to start up a company, Brian, whatever it might be, let's say you want, what if you had to open up a small little company, what would it be actually?
That's hard. I mean,
like, is it like a food you like to make? Would it be a restaurant? Would it be like selling clothes? What would you want to do? Like,
yeah,
just out of nowhere, random question.
It would be a couple of things. It could be one or two things. I think one, you know, I'm working on a catering business, actually with my, you know, girlfriend. So that's
there we go. Is this real? You're doing a catering business?
Yeah.
Oh, what do you guys make?
Well, she, you know, she's the chef. She's the like, you know, inspiration and brainchild, and I'm the one that's just helping on the back end. But
what's she making?
She's making, you know, Dominican. We're both Dominican, so just Dominican inspired food like croquettes, pastelitos, which are like empanadas, quipes, which is like a I don't even know how to describe it, but it's like this shape, and it's just like has meat in it as well. And
sounds gas.
So right now it's like appetizers, you know, and things.
Yeah.
And, you know, catering events, you know, like we did my friend's Super Bowl party, you know, we.
Okay.
Whatever. So like, that's just like a thing I'm working on.
Is there a website?
Not yet.
Okay.
Yeah. But hit me up if you're interested.
Okay. And where do you service? What areas?
New York.
Okay. Look at this. We're promoting it right now. My question to you now is, you get a small marketing fund budget, right? Whatever. Where are you going to put all those dollars into to market this thing? How are you going to spend that money? Like, what's your strategy for this business?
I'm probably doing like a lot of social investment, you know, Instagram ads or something like that.
Maybe hire an influencer, maybe like a in-house, like just one little content creator. It could be like a recent grad or maybe a full-time intern for a year.
Need a micro influencer.
Right.
This has 1,000 followers, but maybe they're in your market. So it's like
in the niche, they know how to create content. Like that's what I would do too. Like that's what I want to do with Break Entering. I just need like, I need a social media influencer at every school.
To
create content consistently.
That makes sense. Yeah.
And it to me, that's the way the industry is going, these content creators. So it kind of goes full circle. Why wouldn't you want to have like a full-time content creator of some sort for every brand? Or I don't know. Just a little thought exercise.
It's true. No, you're right. And I think a lot of people are thinking that way. And look, you can go viral, you know,
easily.
And, you know, that small investment brings way more returns than you ever thought. So,
I mean, you probably follow some, you probably have some friends that you grew up with or you studied with or you worked with at some point that are now almost influencers. They might have, like, I've seen people have 50,000 followers. I don't know if they bought them. I don't know how that works.
Right.
But they're just going off and they're starting to quit their jobs.
If I was like in college and I wanted to start an agency, let's say I wanted to skip the, you know, working in advertising. All you need is like a couple friends. You hire them for social media influencing or whatever. And you can be like the Gen Z shop that just understands Gen Z. And that's a niche that people are interested in, you know? And you can just start there. You know, you don't have to end up there. That's the thing. You don't have to pigeonhole yourself, right?
But it might be nice. I mean, if you are on a campus right now, like talk with Breaking and Entering. We want to start up like this little like nationwide agency of creators that take on clients that you create social media for. So reach out if you're interested. I think that's a smart way just to get your foot in the door, like you said, but then also, heck, that could scale.
Yeah.
Like that could skyrocket you.
Easily.
Fun stuff though, Brian. I got a little distracted there. So this article is out. We talked about the shifts in creative agency world. Super relevant to our listeners. They need to follow this stuff. They need to know where to go, what they're getting into. Are they more excited? Are you less excited? Only you can tell. You got to do your homework. The first step to breaking into advertising is nerding up, knowing the industry, working, developing the skill set is number two. And number three is doing something cool, in my opinion.
Yeah, you're right. That's for any industry, but especially
any industry for sure.
They hear, you know?
Yeah.
Awesome.
Great stuff. Anything else, Brian? I think people know where to find you. And we will be back in 2 weeks. Episode 4 is done then.
This was great, man. Thanks again for this. And honestly, like, you know, every week I'm like, is there
something to talk about?
Like, is there something to talk about? And there's like a million things to talk about. So,
there's no shortage.
Yeah. Hit me up on LinkedIn or Twitter. Just, you know, if you ever want to chat. But Gino, always a pleasure, man.
Rock and roll. All right. See you soon, Brian.
All right.